from the high desert and the great American Southwest, I bid you all good evening, good morning, good afternoon, wherever you may be in the world's prolific time zones, covered like a blanket, each and every one of them, by this program, Coast to Coast AM. I'm Art Bell, filling in for, well, nobody. It's the fifth Sunday of the month, so I guess I'm not technically filling in for anybody. Good evening. It's good to be with you. Now, a little bit of old business first. The story about the young 11-year-old who protected herself in Montana, according to Snopes, false. Shotgun, killed a couple illegal aliens, wrong. Not true, but these things do happen, Snopes goes on. The only news story of recent vintage we could turn up about a minor using a shotgun to kill two armed intruders attempting a home invasion robbery took place in December of 2006, involved a 17-year-old boy in Texas. An overnight home invasion robbery attempt in northeast Harris County ended in a hail of gunfire, left the two suspects deader than doornails, so it does happen. And then there was an 11-year-old boy, this is back in 1988, who'd been left home alone from school. Home Alone 1, shot and killed two men as they tried to take off with the family video cassette recorder. So these things definitely do happen, but that 11-year-old didn't. All right, tonight in the first, webcam shot, a little bit different tonight, same idea, a little different. Top of the website, Art's webcam, just click on that and you'll see little Asia in her protected hat. We're going to talk a little bit about the economy. Why? Because it's happening, or not happening, more likely. I don't know how many of you lately have gone to the gas pump. I did the other day. What used to fill my tank it now costs about twice as much. Now, that's having a severe impact on the economy. Where's oil now? Over $100 a barrel, right? 103, 4, 5, whatever. Varies by the day, but over $100 a barrel. So I don't do the household supermarket shopping, but any of you do know that's already beginning to impact everything else, and it's going to. And honest to God, I don't know how some people are making it. I have no idea. So tonight, Mike Shedlock, or Mish, as he prefers to be called, is a registered investment advisor representative for the Sitka Pacific Capital Management Company, an asset management firm geared towards individuals seeking strong performance with low volatility. Mish is a writer for The Daily Reckoning and co-editor of Whiskey and Gunpowder. Nice name. Free daily commentary about the stock market and the economy. Mish has his own blog at globaleconomics.blogspot.com. Those wishing to discuss the economy, gold, silver, interest rates, and so forth, and the market, of course, can do so with Mish for free at the Market Traders Forum. So in a moment, we will tap on the shoulder of somebody who knows what's going to happen with the economy. Mish coming right up. Coming up next hour, of course, is Dr. Stephen Greer. But right now, I just don't see how anything can be more important to the individual than trying to stay alive. Remember the old song, Staying Alive? Mish, welcome to the program.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be on here. My fourth time on Coast to Coast, my first time with you, and look forward to this hour.
I guess I'm looking forward to it, too. It's pretty scary. I went to the gas pump yesterday. I've got a Camaro, and it was half empty, filled it up, and it was over $60. And I'm kind of wondering, Mish, how a lot of people who commute to work any distance at all, and I used to go, 65 miles one way and then the other, how they're doing it.
Well, they're not doing it, and it's going to get worse. We're seeing cancellations here. Walmart is canceling a whole bunch more stores. People don't like Walmart, but you know what? It's not a high-paying job, but it's at least a job. We're seeing all the financial institutions, the brokerage houses, the banks are laying off people. We're seeing an end to the commercial real estate boom. So all the things that were keeping the economy sort of alive are now starting to implode. And it's one thing to have a car that's tough to fill up with gas. It's another thing to not have a job where you can't even get to the gas station.
Nor have them take your home away.
Or take your home away. Mm. The home situation is so bad that people are walking away from homes. It's called jingle mail now. People are so over their heads in mortgage debt, and their homes are so underwater on the basis of these liar loans, primarily in California, Florida, Las Vegas, all of the bubble areas. When people took out these loans on $400,000 houses, where they said that they were making $100,000 a year, when it turns out they were making $15,000 a year. And so now that the prices of these homes have collapsed from $400,000 to $250,000, people can't make their mortgage payment. They're just sending the keys back to the lender and saying, you know, here's the house, goodbye.
Mitch, let me ask you a question. You said liar loans. Where were the lies? Did lies come from the people who wanted the loans, and then the lies were accepted with a wink and a nod from those making the loans? Or where do you lay the blame?
It was mutual lies. Everyone knew that there were lies going on. And in some instances, but a minority, where you would have outright purposeful fraud by someone changing an application unbeknownst to the borrower, just to make sure that person got the loan. But the vast majority of them was nudge, nudge, wink, wink. Are you sure you're not making $50,000 because that's what you need to get this loan? Mm. And the person would say, oh, yes, I have alimony coming in, and let's consider that. So that's how it was. And everyone knew this was happening, but it was all done on the belief that home prices would keep rising forever.
And had they, it would have been all right, perhaps.
Well, had they, there would have been another problem called hyperinflation or something. Mm-hmm. But
nothing is forever.
Yes, that's right. Nothing keeps going up forever. Eventually, but homes were three times standard deviations above the norm compared to rent prices. And compared to historic average increases in home prices.
Do we have any idea, Mish, how many of these kinds of loans were made?
Oh, there's trillions of dollars worth of these loans that were made. Some of them are resetting now. And actually, that's why the Fed has been on this massive campaign here of slashing interest rates. It's to bail out some of these people that got into ARMs, these teaser rates that Greenspan recommended back in 2003, 2004. Those rates are about ready to reset now. So the Fed has slashed interest rates, hoping like heck that it can prevent some of these people or keep some of these people in their homes, but it's not going to work.
That's what I was going to ask. Is it going to work?
The economy is slowing too fast. The people are too underwater. Frankly, it's not in their best interest to stay in these homes. Look, if you bought a home for $400,000 and it's only worth $250,000 now, and you had no skin in the game, you didn't put down a down payment. These are the kind of loans we're talking about. There were no down payment made on these. And Bush passed a law, or the administration passed a law, Bush signed it, the Congress passed a law, Bush signed it, allowing people to walk away from these loans without recourse. So what are you going to do? This is a law that they passed last year, and at the time that this was being debated, I said, man, this thing is going to encourage people to walk away. And sure enough, that's exactly what happened. Now, some people were going to walk away anyway simply because they bought these houses that they absolutely couldn't afford. They only bought them for hoping to flip it to the next guy.
So you're telling me there's a law that says they can't be chased.
That's right. They can
only. Well, maybe there's a little karma there.
Well, I think there is some karma there, and what's happening is people are turning these houses back to the lenders, and now you have Citigroup, Washington Mutual, Merrill Lynch, anybody that made these loans, they're jingle mail, the keys are being returned to the lender. Mm-hmm. They're stuck with these houses now, and these houses are on the books, at inflated values, of course, and they're carrying these assets on the books as if they're worth full value when everyone knows they're not.
Well, of course, when you're in trouble, that's bad. When the banks are in trouble, that's really bad.
Oh,
so.
Absolutely. And the Fed has practically panicked over this. Just this last week, a couple of interesting developments have happened that we need to talk about. The first one is the SEC came out with a rule last Thursday or Wednesday saying that assets no longer have to be marked to market if the prices represent a result of some kind of distress or not. Well, there's distress in the system here. The SEC has essentially come out and said, look,
SEC, you keep saying SEC, Securities and Exchange Commission?
Securities and Exchange Commission, yeah.
Right.
They've come out with a rule that said banks don't have to mark assets to market if the last sale price or the last known price was a result of some sort of illiquidity or distress. It's like saying, okay, Bear Stearns fell from $30 to $2 or $50 to $10, whatever. But now, let's not mark that to value at $10 because that was a result of distress. We'll keep this asset on the books as if it's worth $50 still, when it's not worth $50 still.
Yes.
It's the Securities Exchange Commission is granting license to lie. And this ruling just came out this last week and said, here you go, corporations. Why don't you just lie about the worth of the assets on your books?
Okay. All right, Mish, look, where is this going to go? I mean, everybody can see where it is now and what's happening and the distress individuals are in with these homes. Where is it ultimately going to go?
Well, ultimately, this might drag out for years, just as it did in Japan, and it appears to me that that's the way we're headed. Now, the correct thing to do would be to let market forces take over, and that's what Ron Paul would do if we could get in someone like him. But instead, we've got the SEC and the Fed all wanting to pretend that assets aren't as bad off as they are. They don't want to mark this stuff to market. They want to keep it on the books and pretend. But meanwhile, banks can't lend because they really know what those assets are worth. A lot of banks are going to be insolvent, but we're going to pretend that they're not, and we're going to drag this thing out for another 10 years, just like Japan did. That's one possible scenario. And right now, it actually looks like that's the scenario that Bernanke is angling for.
Which means over a period of 10 years, all this gets somehow absorbed. What?
Well, let's take the short term first. The economy is souring. We have massive overexpansion of commercial real estate. We don't need any more Walmarts. We don't need any more Pizza Huts. We don't need any more Home Depots, for Christ's sakes. We don't need any more Lowe's. Practically anything you can think of. And we don't need any more nail salons. We've got one every quarter mile here on the strip malls near me. We don't need any of this more stuff. So there's no reason to lend. There's no reasons for businesses to expand. So there's no reason if businesses aren't expanding, they're not going to be hiring. So unemployment is going to shoot up. We're going to have a massive increase in unemployment. And there's going to be more foreclosures. That's what's coming immediately. So, regardless of what the Fed does with interest, the Fed could slash interest rates to zero, and it wouldn't matter. Because if you don't have a job, you can't pay your mortgage.
That's right.
And that's what's coming. We're talking about depression-like conditions, and certainly we're seeing them in some states already. One out of every eight people in the state of Michigan is on food stamps. One out of ten in Ohio. Just came out. The New York Times is reporting on this today. The one out of ten in Illinois. So, and this is already, and we're just heading into a recession. How bad can it get? Pretty bad. Well, maybe we don't see the soup lines that we had in the Great Depression, but instead we're seeing the food stamp line.
Mm-hmm. Those are amazing stats. You say 1 in 8 in Michigan, 1 in 10 in Ohio. Is that correct?
Yes. 1 in 8 in Michigan, 1 in 10 in Ohio.
Of course, those are the industrial areas that have lost so many jobs.
Mm-hmm.
Is it fair to blame, and this is a pretty good question because it's a debate in the presidential primaries, is it fair to blame all this on NAFTA?
No, I don't think it's fair to blame this on NAFTA. One cannot stop globalization. One cannot stop globalization from happening.
Thank you.
It has to be that way. What's out of line is I was just reading Vallejo. Am I pronouncing the name right? Vallejo, California.
Mm-hmm.
They've got an enormous percentage of the population there working for the local city government. And these people are making, you've got your firemen making $200,000 and the top nurse making, you know, $375,000. That might have been San Diego and not Vallejo for the last one. But we've got all of these pension benefits that are promised to city workers. So anyone working for the government gets a sweetheart deal. And, of course, all the money that we're blowing in Iraq and you know, all the government nonsensical spending we're doing, that's weakening the dollar. And the average Joe goes to fill up their car at the gas station and goes to the store to buy things, buy groceries, buy food, try and feed the house. The average guy is worse off now than any time in the last 10, 15 years.
Boy, I've got to agree with that. And again, where is that going? I mean, we see oil prices now above $100 a barrel just about every day, I think, and probably headed higher. Are they going to, do you view, is it your view they will at some point stabilize or even drop, or are they going to keep going up?
This really depends. There's a wild card here on whether or not, And one can't discount anything that this current administration might do in terms of, say, attacking Iran. Now, if that were to happen, I think we would see $200 oil overnight. And I think we would see the same thing. McCain's practically promised to invade Iran. At least that's the way I'm reading him.
And, to be fair, I haven't heard that.
He wants to be in Iraq for 100 years, and he wants to solve all the problems in the region. And I guess maybe I'm reading between the lines too much, but just being in Iraq for the next 100 years is certainly not going to make things more stable. To stabilize the region, we need to get out of the region, I think. And there's less oil flowing out of Iraq now than there was before the war started.
Yeah, I'd like to ask about that a little bit. I mean, there is a lot of oil in Iraq. Now, we've spent blood, money, and sweat in Iraq. And I don't think that, and all we've got to show for it right now is $100 plus oil. So when are we going to get the benefits of, you know, war, the spoils of war?
As long as we stay there, we're not going to get benefit. We're a destabilizing force in Iraq. I think the sooner we get out of there, the better. Ron Paul, I know what he would do. Unfortunately, I don't think he has a chance to win the election, but I voted for Ron Paul. I voted for Ron Paul proudly. And but I'm for any candidate that's most likely to get us out of Iraq, because that's what and the interesting thing to me, Art, is the population finally put two and two together and figured that out. I was actually stunned. Fortune magazine called me a few weeks ago, right before this poll, and I told them there was going to be a national referendum on walking away, and they thought that I was talking about walking away from houses, and I said, no, walking away from Iraq. And they said, what do you mean? I said, well, I think that's what this election is going to be about, and lo and behold, the very next day, and I was really surprised by it, but they took a national poll, and they asked people what the single best thing that could happen for the economy. And the answer was, the number one answer by almost 50% of the people was to leave Iraq. People finally put it together what this war in Iraq is costing us. We can no longer afford to be the world's policeman. We can no longer afford to spend trillions of dollars over there. That's what it's going to cost when you look at the future liabilities of all the soldiers that are, you know, coming back maimed and injured, and what it's going to cost to medically take care of them for the rest of their lives. It's just really sad. And this war didn't have to be, but it was. So now what can we do about it? We can bring the troops home.
All right, Mitch, hold it right there. We're going to take a break here at the bottom of the hour. When we get back, we'll tackle this question of Iraq and whether it really is tied to the economy and whether the economy is going to tank whether or not we leave Iraq. It's really interesting. In all these years, when the economy has been pretty good these past years, we've had people like Michael Sedlock on the program, Mish, we call him. And they've forecast doom and gloom and bad things are going to happen, and people aren't saving, and they're going to lose their homes, and they're going to lose their jobs, and there's going to be a lot of homeless and people on food stamps. And guess what? Here it is. The only question is, how much worse is it going to get? Well, we'll explore that and how big a part of it Iraq really plays in all of this in a moment. Well, all right, Mish, if we can, let's get Iraq out of the conversation for a moment.
Sure.
And break it away from the economy. Now, it looks to me as though we're in trouble, Iraq or no Iraq. The way things are going with the banks, the way things are going with this home implosion, and the way things are going with oil, which is the backbone of virtually everything, Iraq or no Iraq, we're in trouble. Isn't that fair to say?
Oh, absolutely. That's fair to say. I mean, look at all the unfunded pension liabilities. Look at all of the Medicaid and Medicare package that was passed that we absolutely can't afford. Look at the rules and regulations that we have that prevent drugs being imported from Canada at cheaper prices. Look at the sweetheart deal that we made with the government made with some of the big pharmaceutical companies that essentially says there would be no group negotiation over prices on prescription drugs. I mean, all of these things add up to a big picture. And even on a smaller scale, we have things like building bridges to nowhere in Alaska, you know, where all the congressmen, you know, push through their pet projects for their own little district, and then on a, well, you vote for mine, I'll vote for yours kind of thing, you got all these little projects, and you look at them and say, well, you know, that's only a billion here, but it's a billion here, and it's a billion there, and, you know, 50 million.
I know that these things make people angry, but they're still a small, very tiny part of the economy, actually, even though they make people angry. The real big problem, it seems to me, is oil and the price of oil, because it's going to ultimately affect every single thing we buy, and that is the economy.
Well, we have a situation where there's peak oil. We are not running out of oil, but we're running out of oil that can be gotten cheaply. And until we put in some policies that are likely to do something about that, but instead we put in policies that subsidize ethanol. So now we have ethanol subsidized, so we have corn that should be going to feed cattle, going to produce ethanol, instead of, say, importing ethanol from Brazil that wants to actually export it to us for a far cheaper price than what we can produce it for here in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And instead, we're growing corn, and that's causing the food stocks to go up. It's causing everything. It's just a massive distortion. Everywhere you look at, the government has distorted the picture of what's happening. Now, I actually expect short term that oil prices are going to come down, and the reason is I think the recession is going to be longer and deeper than anyone thinks. So if oil prices come down, it'll be a sign probably that things are really bad, not necessarily that things are getting better. I see a recession coming not just to the United States, but I see one coming to the UK. There's property bubbles in the UK and Spain and Ireland that are just as big in the United States. There's an enormous property bubble in Vancouver and Toronto in Canada. Mm-hmm. Those prices are going to crash, and Europe is going to hit a recession as well.
All right, Mish, what about the dollar? The dollar has been falling against most other currencies. I spent some time not long ago in the Philippines. At that time, one U.S. dollar equaled 53 Philippine pesos. Right now, I haven't looked today, but it's probably in the order of 40 or 41 pesos. So it's fallen from 53 to 40.
It's fallen against almost every. It's fallen against every major currency. That's for sure.
Right.
And it's fallen against a lot of minor currencies as well. I don't follow the Philippines, but my gosh, in 2000, the euro was at 0.85, and now it's at 1.57. That's
wow.
Almost what is that? Almost double. The U.S. dollar has fallen in half in relationship to the euro in the last 7 years. That's a pretty big decline, wouldn't you say?
I would say it's gigantic. Is there anything that can or will be done about it? In other words, do you expect that trend to continue or reverse?
I expect that trend to reverse. I expect the yen, however, to strengthen. And what we've had is a massive carry trade in going on in Japan. The carry trade for
what does that mean?
It's borrowing in a low interest rate currency like the yen. Japan had interest rates. They're now just a half of a percent there. For a long time, they were a quarter of 1%, 0.25. So all the hedge funds, big speculators, banks, brokerage houses, everybody piled into this carry trade of borrowing money at 0.25% in yen and investing it in T-bills in the United States where they could get 5%.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that works as long as the U.S. dollar stays relatively stable. But once the U.S. dollar falls more than 5%,
yeah,
then you have a problem. These people
sure.
are losing money now in the carry trade. And all that money that was borrowed went into U.S. assets. Some even speculated not just in interest rates, but in stocks, in gold, in other things, and also even in the euro. So when that unwinds, you know, that's going to put a lot of market pressures on the things that were speculated.
So you feel the dollar may rebound?
I think the dollar will tank versus the yen, but I think the dollar is likely to rebound against Europe and the pound. And the reason being is people in the United States are so they only see the problems that we have here in the United States. They don't see all the problems that are going on elsewhere. But the rest of the world does. You know, and people in Germany, they understand the problems in Germany. And the German banks, by the way, are as bad off as the banks here in the United States. And the property bubbles in Spain and the UK are as bad as the property bubbles here.
Gotcha.
So when these things start to correct, we'll see Europe starts to cut interest rates, we'll probably see a decent-sized rally of the dollar versus the euro.
Okay, well, now let me move on quickly. We don't have a lot of time. I want to ask you about metals. Gold is way up in the stratosphere now. Mm-hmm. Silver is in its own stratosphere. Are these bubbles? And, you know, while it was worth, certainly a lot of advisors like yourself said, buy gold, buy gold, buy gold. Well, that advice turned out to be pretty damn good considering the price of gold and silver today. But what about now? Is it a good buy now, or is it a gold and silver bubble?
It depends on one's time frame. Right now, gold seasonality is unfavorable through about August, through July. So that's just kind of a short-term seasonal kind of play. Right now, we're actually looking for this counter-trend play, like I said, in the dollar to rally versus the euro. So if that happens, it's possible for gold to correct here significantly. But in a longer term outlook, what you have is gold has been rallying and is likely to continue to rally against all the fiat currencies, and certainly the U.S. dollar right now is the worst of them. But gold is rallying versus the euro, in spite of the strength of the euro versus the U.S. dollar. So I view gold as money, and it's over the long haul likely to be a safe haven against any of these currencies.
All right. Well, you've brought a bit of a different view to things, and one I hadn't thought about. While things are bad here, and while we're going through these housing corrections and so forth and so on here, you're saying it's going to happen in the rest of the world. So hang in there, folks. We may be going through the pain now, but there's going to be plenty of pain to spread around.
Oh, my gosh, there's going to be absolute pain to be spread around. The Fed is panicked over pain here now. Late last week, the Treasury Department came out and asked for a market stability regulator, and that ought to scare the bejeebies out of everyone, because here the Fed is the most guilty party in this, in slashing interest rates to 1%, weakening the dollar, spawning this housing bubble, and all of a sudden the Treasury Department, Paulson, comes out and says, well, things are so bad here now that we need to coordinate things and put the Fed in charge. They want the Fed to have more oversight of hedge funds, more oversight of non-banks, and more to do with the SEC itself. And my gosh, I did a post. I said, my God, talk about putting the Fed in charge of the hen house, is how I called it. And that's exactly what the proposal is. This is going to be debated all next week. We don't have the details on this thing yet. But when you see this kind of action, and the last time we saw this was during the Great Depression.
All right, Mish, I want you to give some advice to people. Let's talk for a moment to people who are not part of this horrible subprime mess, and they're upside down in their homes. They're going to lose their homes. Let's talk to the average person out there who probably has, you know, paid off pretty well, has some equity in their home, and they're doing okay, but they're scared to death today about what's going on. How would you advise? They've got a job. You know, they're the average American. They've got a job. Perhaps both the husband and wife have a job, and they're doing okay. But they're looking around, and they're getting scared. What's good advice for these people?
Well, they should be scared. The number one rule here for everyone is to start living within their means. Have some, and as weak as the U.S. dollar is, and as distasteful as it might be, it's good to have a lot of cash on hand in case you lose your job. I talked about rising unemployment. There aren't any jobs that can absolutely be considered safe here. And the number one thing that people need to do is try and have a year's worth of cash cushion for all of their living expenses, just so they don't get forced out of their home at a very, very inopportune time here when it's hard to sell homes. That's the number one thing they can do. The number two thing they can do is lighten up on risk. If they're in the stock market here now, maybe they should pull back. You know, Treasury bills are only paying 1 or 2%. Maybe you can get 3 or 4% on CDs. But there's nothing wrong here with getting a positive return of 3%, even if you're losing to the price of gasoline at the pump or the price of food. Sometimes, and this is probably one of them,
better safe than sorry.
Well, yeah, but he who loses least does best. You know, maybe there is no absolute winning option here. I didn't mean to be giving myself a plug here, but if someone wants to get a hold of us at Sitka Pacific Capital Management, more than happy to address any individual concerns that people might have. Some people can do that.
If you didn't mean to give a plug, that was a hell of an accident.
Well, it sure was. I didn't plan. What I meant was I didn't plan this coming in. But since
it's
you asked
right.
me what people can do, I'll take advantage of it. That's all.
That's all right.
And just generally, just be prepared, lighten risk. But one thing for a lot of people out there, mortgages are resetting right now, a lot of them. And people that were in 3-1 ARMs a few years ago, or 5-1 ARMs 5 years ago. Those rates are resetting now. And people need to be aware of mortgage interest rate scams that are going on right now. I talked about one of them specifically with had to do with Citigroup, where they actually sent out letters to clients saying, your rate is going to reset higher in a couple of months. We're going to offer you this special deal here right now. I got proof of this, documented proof on my site, so anybody that wants to see it can do a search for Dear Citigroup Customer, and you'll find my post where I talked about this. But the actual fact is, because Treasury rates have fallen so much, that when these ARMs reset, they're actually going to reset lower.
Yeah, that's what I would think. Fed reduced, what, 0.75 point recently, so obviously they're going to go lower.
Exactly. I mean, Treasury rates have gone down. One-year Treasury rates have gone down from 4.5% down to 1.5%. So anyone that was on an ARM tied to Treasury rates is now going to reset lower, possibly 1.5 points lower. And instead, we're seeing scare tactics by some of these lenders going out there. Your rate is going to reset in 3 months. Why don't you lock in here at 6%? When, in fact, if they do nothing, they might get an automatic reset down to 5%. So people need to not fall for any of these mortgage scams that are going on out there right now.
But Mason, how long is that going to last? If you stick with the ARM, and I agree with you, I'm sure it's going to dip a bit. It has to. But how long is it going to stay down?
Well, right now, if all the people can afford is that lower rate, then there's really not a choice. But how long is it going to stay down? I'm assuming a few more years. So there's a little bit here. And I'm expecting the housing market is actually going to bottom, or the first chance of a bottom, actually, let's put it that way, is about 4 years from now. And that's just based on a lot of the housing inventory, on historic patterns, on undershooting. Mm-hmm. I don't think housing is going to pick up and be a hotbed of activity after that, but it's going to take at least 4 years to work off this inventory, and I expect the economy is going to head in and out of recession over the next 4 years. That's going to keep a lid probably on interest rates for that period of time. Okay. So it's funny, we got the opposite of what was happening in 2003 when Greenspan was actively urging people to get into ARMs right when interest rates were about ready to shoot up. Now we have everybody absolutely panicked out of their mind about where interest rates are going. They're going into fixed rates just as ARMs are interest rates are ready to drop, and perhaps they're better off in an ARM. Absolutely amazing, just complete stunning psychology change here.
It is.
From what Greenspan was recommending and now what banks are representing. In both instances, it looks like we're seeing these recommendations from people that are not in anyone's best interest to take.
Seems like there's a lot of karma going on here. If somebody planned all this, I'm sure a lot of people made money on it, but it looks like instead of a lot of people being in trouble, well, they are, a lot of banks are now in trouble, and so they're having to move in the exact opposite direction in order to prevent the whole damn country from going under.
Well, that's what happened, actually, back in 2003. The Greenspan refused to take the medicine there. Mm-hmm. We had all these dot-com companies imploding, and we had all these banks that made all of these bad loans to dot-com companies. So Greenspan comes by and says, oh, let's get this economy humming, so we're going to slash interest rates down to 1%. Sure enough, it creates a big housing bubble. Banks had enormous profits for the next 4 years. Everyone overstayed the party. Mm-hmm. The problem is we've already used the housing bubble. I don't see another source of jobs that the Fed can cut interest rates to zero here, and it's not going to spawn another housing boom. And without that, I don't see a source of jobs. The housing boom created jobs not just in housing, but at jobs at Home Depot. Sure. All the Lowe's, all the strip malls that went up around all the new subdivisions, even things like grass seed and paint and people putting in new kitchens themselves. all of that activity.
All right. Listen, Mish, we're out of time. We've got to go. I really, really appreciate your input. A lot of it is very valuable, I think, particularly in this last half hour or so. And I want to thank you for being on the program.
It's a pleasure to be here, Art. I hope we can do this again.
Good night, Mish. All right, folks. There you have it. That's The Outlook. What do you think?